You are listening to the fifth season of Rio Grande's For the Love of Jewelers podcast, a celebration of jewelers, the jewelry community, and the art of jewelry making. In this new season, we are excited to announce that there will be a rotating cast of Rio Grande Jewelry Tech team members hosting the show. We will share our love and knowledge of jewelry making, along with interviews featuring industry leaders, educators, and fellow jewelers in the community.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Tuesday Live at 11. I'm Shane Hendren, and today I have a special guest, our last tech team member to appear on the show, John Sarton. But before we get to John, I want to remind you, today is the last day for our code Lindstrom1. That'll get you 10% off anything Lindstrom. And you can see some of the Lindstrom products we have right here, but we have new products on the website. If you look under our new offerings, I know there's a new set of Lindstrom cutters, as well as some needle nose pliers. So if you haven't seen all of the Lindstrom products that we have to offer, today is your last chance to use Lindstrom 1 to get 10% off anything Lindstrom on our website. And I encourage you to do that as soon as you're done watching Tech Tuesday. John, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Good. So you're a member of the tech team. Tell us a little bit how you came to Rio Grande.
So I came to Rio Grande about going on 9 years now. before that, I was on the road doing art fairs and festivals throughout the country, and also had quite a few galleries that carried my jewelry. And one day, a friend of mine, an ex-tech team member, Sesson Durgam, he contacted me and said that the tech team was hiring. And so I decided I'd go ahead and apply for the position. And luckily, I got the position. So that's how I came to Rio Grande.
That's cool. So how did you get started in the whole jewelry thing? How did you get started as a jeweler?
So I didn't start doing jewelry until I was about 30 years old. And it's definitely a convoluted story, like a lot of stories of how people come to, I guess, their calling in life. But ultimately, it came down to being in university, and I needed to take some other credits, you know, some
electives.
Electives, exactly. And I was actually a potter, and so since I had to branch out into other electives, I went ahead and I took jewelry. And I met the teacher there, Julie German Melka, and she just kind of let me do what I wanted to do in the jewelry studio. She didn't really put a lot of requirements on me. She saw something in me that I guess I didn't see in myself, and that was it. I kind of walked away from pottery and started doing jewelry.
So what school did you go to?
I did Metro State College Denver.
Oh,
that's where,
okay.
That's where I met Julie.
Interesting. So out of doing elective, you ended up becoming a jeweler. That's kind of the same thing that I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. So what was it about jewelry that you were drawn to that
so it
won
was,
out over pottery?
Specifically, it was working with metal. So, I was born and raised in a body shop working on automobiles, and so it's not that big of a leap. It's just a smaller tooling, but kind of the same concepts of how to move metal. And that is the focus of my work, is really the metal work itself. And I utilize stones as accents to the metal work. So, it's just a different way of sculpting other than, you know, sculpting fenders on a car, sculpting rings and bracelets and pendants.
Cool. So yeah. Now is your chance, everyone. You can call in. Oh, you can't call in. You can text. You can message. Get your questions in for John. Anything you want to know that John is our tech team person today. We have a leftover question from Facebook from last week, John. Deborah Dowes from Facebook asked, which gauge of sterling wire would you use for prongs on a fine silver bezel?
So I am assuming that you're, because typically prongs are associated with faceted stones, but I'm assuming that you're making a bezel to hold a cabochon, and using the prongs as your retainer. So, it all depends on the design of the piece. It depends on what you want it to look like. If you want the prongs to be more of a minimalistic design aspect, or more of a design aspect with the piece, but I wouldn't go with anything less than 16 gauge. And that's just because if you are doing any type of cutting seats and prongs, you don't want to thin that prong out to the point that it becomes fragile. So 16 gauge would be the absolute minimum, and that would be on smaller stones. If you're talking about much larger stones, then I would go up from there into larger diameter wire.
Great. We got our first question on Instagram from Night Owl Designs, John, and they want to know, what kind of jewelry did you start out making?
I started out making my own style of jewelry. So I was really interested whenever I started doing jewelry. I met Harold O'Connor, which is an artist. He used to be up in Santa Fe, and now he's in Colorado. And he did a lot of granulation work, and utilizing also a lot of different surface textures like reticulation. So I was really drawn to that style. I wanted something that looked more, something that looked kind of dug out of the ground rather than highly finished. So it's kind of hard to put my jewelry in any type of a style. I didn't really follow many design aspects other than the art of granulation and utilizing reticulation and patinas, things like that.
Cool. So it's a very naturalistic look.
Correct.
Is there some place that people can go to see your work now? Do you have a website?
Yep. Or johnsartandesigns.com.
Okay.
Yep.
So johnsartandesigns.com. We've got another question from Instagram, and this one is from, I don't know if this is a word or abbreviation, KFINN Designs. And their question is, which welder would you recommend for someone on a budget? And I'd use it for small jump rings and tack things into place before soldering.
So you could utilize any of the pulse arc welders. It depends on how small of a budget you're looking at. The least expensive one would be the Impulse 30. However, it depends on the size of material or the gauge of material you're working with. The Impulse I wouldn't use for anything less than 26 gauge in thickness, because it just, you can't turn the power down that far. That being said, the PJ Welder by Orion does have the controllability that you can turn that down to, I believe, 1 volt, which is a lot better to use on thinner, smaller items. From there, then you can just go up within the welders. I personally like the PUK. It's something that I have in my own shop, and I never turned back after I got that.
Fantastic. So we got another question from Instagram from Coyotito, and they want to know, what are your favorite kinds of pieces to make?
I really like pendants. I like anything that is more of a large canvas to work with, because the smaller the canvas is, the less detail I can get into it. So my favorite thing is pendants, actually. I really love pendants and necklaces.
Cool. We have another question from Instagram from Hollering Designs. What do you use for resizing rings without taking the stone out, other than using a welder?
So it depends on the stone. If the stone can accept heat, then you don't necessarily have to take the stone out, depending on the metal you're working with. If you're working on a silver item, I always recommend removing the stone. And that's just because if it's something that cannot be easily replaced, silver conducts so much heat that you could easily crack a stone if you're not careful. So there are some heat shields out there that you can use on some things. But again, if you're working with really sensitive stones to heat, like turquoise or lapis or opals or things like that, the best thing is go ahead and remove the stone out of the piece and then repair the piece. And right. then it's a better outcome all in all.
So doing it the hard way is usually the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree.
So today is the last day for Lindstrom. Lindstrom One gets you 10% off anything Lindstrom. Do you have a specific Lindstrom product that you prefer or something that you like from Lindstrom?
I really like the Lindstrom cutters. They are, and I do have, I don't know the number of cutters that I do have, but overall the Lindstrom pliers are some of the best pliers that you can get. So they're finely finished. Mm-hmm. The joints are tight. The cutters cut nice and clean. There's nothing you could go wrong with a Lindstrom. Absolutely not.
Fantastic. We got another question on Instagram from Jenna. I'm sorry if I butcher this. Honshell. Why do you think it's so hard for jewelers to find production casters and stone setters?
That's a really good question. And the only thing that I can say is the jewelry industry is not what it used to be decades ago. There is not a large influx of jewelers. And if you go into a lot of places, a lot of the jewelers that you do see, bench jewelers, are older people. Mm-hmm. So the younger people are not coming in to into the industry, which is a shame. As far as getting people that know what they're doing, yeah, it's a difficult question to answer.
Well, my observation is as far as casters, all the casters that I know have more work than they want.
Yeah.
And there's if anybody out there is thinking about getting into the casting business, there is a huge opportunity there, especially if you have a background in CAD or 3D printing, that kind of thing. That's one of the reasons why we started our customization process here at Rio Grande, because there's a huge demand. During COVID, we saw a lot of people develop the ability to design jewelry,
right?
But they didn't have the skill set to produce it.
Yep.
And I have some friends that have a custom casting business in Santa Fe, and because of that, their business is booming. Mm-hmm. And that's why we do customization here at Rio Grande now. So people can send in their CAD designs, and then we'll grow them and cast them and completely finish them, package them, the whole nine yards. We can do it all here.
Yep.
So for anybody out there who's interested in doing that, we sell the equipment to start your own casting business, which is a great business to be in right now.
And we can help you get involved in the casting business if that's something that you are wanting to do.
Right.
And we can help with any types of problems that you have in your castings. We can actually guide you along if that is something that you actually want to learn and do.
Yeah. And then as far as stone setting, I know here in Albuquerque, there's only a handful of people that mm-hmm. do outside stone setting.
Yep.
You go to places like New York and LA, you're going to find more people.
Right.
But in between the coasts, there's not a lot. And the people that do outside stone setting, they stay as busy as they want to stay.
Exactly. A good stone setter can never lack for a job.
The challenge, I think, that a lot of outside or small jewelers or people that are starting up run into is those people also charge a premium for their work.
Right.
Because it's all about supply and demand. And there's a huge demand for what they do. And it takes years to develop that skill set. So they can, I was in a class recently, and there was a stone setter in that class. And he made over $75,000 a year mm-hmm. just setting stones.
Right.
That's all he did.
So for the limited amount of jobs that are out there, You definitely will have to pay a good wage to get a good stone setter or caster, for that matter.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's kind of the old rule of thumb: you get what you pay for.
Exactly.
If it sounds too good to be true, then it probably is
too good, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because it does take years and years for people to develop the skills and to put together the tools.
Exactly.
You know, the tools are the other thing that that people don't take into consideration. There's been a lot of technological advances in jewelry, especially in the last 30 years.
Right.
But when you come down to it, like the Lindstrom pliers and cutters, for example, all they've done is fine-tune something that's been utilized for thousands of years.
Exactly. Yep.
They've just made it, you know, more precise with the best materials possible.
And better feel, better hand feel, better ergonomics for long use.
And that's a big thing, is ergonomics. Yep. Ergonomics is something that really has come to the forefront. And that brings me to a question: hydraulics versus hand forming. What are the pros and cons?
So hydraulic forming, one of the big pros of hydraulic forming is you can work with a lot thicker material than you can typically work with hand forming. That being said, I've seen some people that have been able to form some very, very thick material by hand and hammer. Another thing that outshines hand forming there is you can do hydraulic forming, and say you want to make a bracelet out of 3-gauge material, really thick, chunky bracelet, and you want to engrave in the flat, and then you want to turn it into a bracelet. You can actually do that. You can engrave in the flat, and then you can form it into a bracelet without disturbing that texture, without disturbing that that pattern that you put in or that engraving that you put in. Whenever you're working with a hammer, it's kind of easy to actually destroy a texture or an engraving that you might work on. So another thing is back to ergonomics. So if you're doing a lot of production work and you are forming, you know, 200 bracelets a week or more, doing it by hammer and by arm, you will wear yourself out really quick. Whenever you can get a hydraulic press and you can do it in a lot quicker time, the piece is virtually finished, and you don't wear out any sockets. Hydraulic forming, I think, is definitely the best way, especially for production.
Well, I can testify to the fact that I need 2 rotator cuffs replaced because of decades of hammering.
Yep.
But we've got a question that came in from Nancy Carber on Instagram, and she wants to know, where do you get the clientele for casting?
You would have to, if you're talking about wanting to put together a service bureau, a casting service for people, you would have to, number one, make sure that you're good at the trade, and then you're going to have to advertise. So, I would say start advertising out on Facebook and, Instagram, to pull those people in. You could also go and talk to some of your jeweler friends and see if they might want a service like that to get started. So,
it's interesting because, I'm thinking of one of the casters here in town, Silver Cloud Casting. Charles has been around forever.
Yep.
And we refer a lot of people to him. He has a very old website. Yep. He does no advertising, and he has more work than
he can do anything with. Yeah.
Right.
It's all word of mouth.
Yep. It's all about quality.
Yep.
Because the one thing I know is, and I tell my students this, at school, it's all about craftsmanship.
Right.
The design sells, but craftsmanship is what gets you repeat customers.
Absolutely.
When you make anything, it doesn't matter what you do, it has to have a high level of craftsmanship. And if you do that and you do it at a fair price, then people are going to talk about it, and you're going to get the work.
Absolutely.
But in this day and age, Nancy, you're going to have to go on social media.
Yeah.
That's the, you got to put out there what you're doing. You got to toot your own horn, if you will.
I would agree.
And show the world. Okay, I've got some more questions here. I've got YouTube from John Roms. They say, I find that 95% of people can't help with how I want to produce my designs. Also, out of interest, what makes a jeweler's desk so dang expensive? The first part is a statement, really.
Right, right. The second part, as far as jeweler's benches, essentially, a jeweler's bench is not necessarily a mass-produced item. It's not like a couch that is made for the general public. It is a more of a specific type of a piece of furniture. Mm-hmm. So that's always going to have a higher price than say, something that you can find at one of your table that you can find at a furniture store. So,
And the other thing is there's minimal requirements as far as the materials used.
Yeah.
You have to use quality materials in a bench because it's going to be hammered on. It
needs to be heavy. It needs to,
right.
Yeah. Yep.
You can't have something light that's going to vibrate or move around or anything like that.
Right.
And sadly, it's hard to find good materials these days.
Absolutely.
So that becomes one of the big cost issues in benches.
And at one time, there were some builders of benches that produced incredible benches, but sadly, they're no longer with us.
So, right. Well, it's custom furniture making.
Exactly.
So it's sort of like the jewelry industry in itself. I don't want to call it a dying art because there's definitely a lot of great people out there that are doing it.
Yep.
But it's one of those things where it's a supply and demand issue.
Exactly.
Because my first bench, I built myself. I built it from a discarded potter's wheel bench at UNM, and I still use it. After 30 years, it's still in service. So typically a bench is a one-time buy. So you may spend a lot of money up front, but
it'll last you a lifetime.
Buy you something that's going to last.
Yep.
And absolutely. Then to address the other part of his question, as far as how getting help with how to produce his designs, my recommendation would be to call into Rio Grande and talk to somebody in our customization department, because that's what they do.
Right.
They help people figure out how to get their designs turned into jewelry, and they'll help you work through, what can work, what can't work, tweaks and changes. We've got people in our customization department that have decades and decades of experience.
Yep.
And they'll definitely be able to help you with all of those questions. I've got, that's more of a statement from L10. Yay, I love the host with the most, Shane. I gained so much knowledge from his videos. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Agreed.
And I wouldn't be able to do it without everybody else on my team. Yep. The tech team, we've got 8 of us here. We're here to answer your questions only during the daytime, not at night.
Right.
However, some of you have my number, which brings me to this next question, which came in via text. So for those of you who have access, but we'll go with it. They're looking at buying a guillotine shear.
Okay.
And they want a recommendation on what guillotine shear you think is the best buy for the money here at Rio Grande.
The Durston Heavy Duty Guillotine Shear is the one that I would recommend.
Is that the 30 millimeter?
That is the, not the 30 millimeter. That's it's 12 inches. That's the large one.
Yeah,
That's the really heavy one. And the reason I say that is because that one, you can actually cut up to 10 gauge material. And so some of the other ones are limited to, maybe 18, maybe 16. Mm-hmm. And also you're limited to the size. So if you're wanting to do cuff bracelet, if you wanted to do bangle bracelets, you're going to need something that's going to be able to cut a longer strip than a lot of those will cut.
So they want to know if the heavy-duty precision 7-inch guillotine shear, what your opinion is of it. That's the same one that we have in the lab.
Yep, that's a good shear.
That's the one they're looking at.
That's an absolutely good shear. I think you can cut up to 16 gauge of material with that. So anything above that, if you're wanting to work with thicker. And that will cut a blank for a cuff bracelet. So yeah, absolutely. That is a that is an excellent shear.
That's the one we have in our lab.
Correct.
And and it was here before I got here, so it's been here almost 7 years.
It's been used and abused too.
And it's still going strong. We haven't even had it resharpened.
No.
And I know that we have definitely abused it.
Yes.
So
we're not gonna say how though.
That one can that one definitely is recommended.
Yeah.
But we're getting closer to our time here, so I'm going to ask you a question I ask everybody else. Well, I've got two questions. The first one is going to be, what tool on your bench would you call your favorite tool?
A singular tool or a group of tools?
According to the way it is, a singular tool.
Okay, so man, that's like picking your favorite child.
Which hammer do you love the most?
That is the thing. So there is.
Phil had a hard time with this too.
Yeah, I would have to pick a hammer, and that is because I think hammers are definitely one of the most useful tools in your, at least for me, because I do forming. So I would have to pick a hammer, and I can't pick just one. I would have to pick a couple.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. The next question is, what tool do you recommend that all jewelers must have? I'm really interested about this one because there seems to be a theme here.
So probably I would say the most useful tool that you can buy, especially starting out, would be a flex shaft. And that is because no matter what you're doing, if you're doing any piercing work, you've got to drill holes. If you're doing any setting work, you've got to use burrs. If you're doing polishing, you've got to, you know, you have to use some type of, well, you don't have to, you can do it hand polish. But I think that a flex shaft is definitely the best, one of the first tools that you really should invest in first.
Is there that a particular flex shaft?
Or a micromotor. As far as the specific model of flex shaft, I would go with the Fordham SR. That is essentially the universal flex shaft. It's going to allow you to do all of those things. It'll also allow you to run your tooling backwards, but you have to make sure that you're only using a chuck style handpiece if you're going to do that. And there are some advantages to running some tooling backwards that the SR can certainly do for you.
So I've got a related question via YouTube from Vestacha International, and they want to know, can the Fordham SR motor do engraving? And is there a fitting you can attach to be able to engrave with it? I know there is. There's the aftermarket made by a non-Fordham company, and we don't sell it.
Right, exactly. And it fits onto a hammer handpiece.
Right.
And so, yeah, there is something out there that you can use. The trouble with something like that is the precision that you can get within your engraving. It can certainly be done. And I've seen people use it in great ways, but if you're really wanting to get into engraving, I would recommend going with some form of a pneumatic engraving system, either
the Lindsay.
Lindsay is the one that I would point, especially beginners to, or GRS for sure. Yeah.
So we've got another question from Coyote on Instagram, and they want to know, how did you become the jeweler you are today, and who would you like to thank?
So I talked about that right in the beginning. Throughout all of my, essentially the limited amount of formal training that I've had, really ended up being only two semesters in college. And then the rest, I didn't necessarily learn on my own, but it was other people that helped me along the way. I do not believe in the thought of being a self-taught jeweler. I don't think that anybody on this planet is a self-taught jeweler, because we always learn from other people. We learn from YouTube. We learn from each other. But the person that got me into jewelry and really sparked that that love for jewelry is a lady by the name of Julie German Melka, and she is an incredible jewelry artist. I believe she's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan now, and her website, I believe, is Flying Anvil Designs, if I can remember it right. And she's the one that I really will certainly say thank you for showing me this path and putting me on this career path.
Fantastic. Absolutely. So with that, I have one last question for you. If you could go back to your 12-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself?
Start doing jewelry at 12 years old. Absolutely. That is something that, you know, I've done a lot of things throughout my life. I've had a lot of careers, I guess. Everything from being a jet mechanic to a locksmith to finally a jeweler. This is the job that makes my soul sing. And if I could have known that whenever I was 12 years old and ran with it at that time, there would be no limits today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Absolutely. Okay. We want to remind you guys, after this live, you can listen to this again on our For the Love of Jewelers podcast. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, we'll have a recording of this for you to listen to again. It'll also be available on YouTube. And don't forget, today is the last day to use the code Lindstrom1 for 10% off anything Lindstrom. John,
you'll never get a better set of pliers for sure.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Until next Tuesday.
Yep. Take care.
Have fun.